Ohio seniors make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. Enroll by December 7th.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.
Hello, and welcome to Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. You know, just when I think that I know most of what there is to know about the worst killers in modern history, as it always does when I think I know a little too much, life slaps me upside the head and reminds me I don't know anything at all. We talk about so many despicable people here. We talk about terrible behavior and horrifying actions. And part of the reason that we are so fascinated with these subjects is because they are, in fact, quite common. People who are not our people, not true crime people, they know about Ted Bundy and the Night Stalker. But when I talk to people that aren't into this kind of thing, I'm always surprised that they don't understand. There are thousands of serial killers, each one as bad as the next, but some are worse than others, even if most people have never heard of them. You might not have heard of this man, and by the end of this video, you might wish you still hadn't. This is the story of serial killer Bobby Joe Long. Let's get into it. October 14th, 1953. Robert Joseph Long, who came to be known as Bobby Joe Long, was born in Canova, West Virginia, to Joe and Louetta Long. His parents divorced when he was 2 years old, and he moved with his mother to Miami. Bobby was born with Klinefelter syndrome, which is caused by an extra X chromosome. The condition causes excessive estrogen production, and that, in turn, results in female traits, even in men. When Bobby was a child, he was relentlessly teased and bullied because he had larger breasts. Klinefelter syndrome also causes sparse body hair, unusual body proportions, and small male genitalia, and can also cause, you know, like softer features in men, perhaps something you would call a baby face. A baby face that might make someone look younger or more innocent, less dangerous than they really are. When Bobby Joe Long was a child, and perhaps because of his Klinefelter syndrome, he had a lot of accidents. He was prone to tripping and falling, hurting himself, falling downstairs, things like that. And on several occasions, these accidents resulted in serious head injuries. When he was 4 years old, he almost drowned at the beach when he was pulled under by a wave. When he was five, he fell from a swing and was knocked unconscious and landed on a stick that skewered his eyelid. When he was six, he failed the first grade and had to repeat it. And that same year, he was thrown from his bicycle into a parked car. Several of his teeth were knocked out and he was diagnosed with a severe concussion. In 1961, he was hit by a car. Later that same year, he darted out into the road and was struck by a car again. That time, he lost more teeth and was left with a deformed jaw. He once fell off a pony and was dizzy for weeks. He fell from a fence and had stitches. It's kind of a wonder he made it to adulthood. As most of you know, I'm sure, childhood injuries, especially frontal lobe injuries to the head, have become very prevalent in the discussion about what makes a serial killer later in life. Current studies now indicate that 1 in 4 serial killers suffered a moderate to severe head injury in childhood, or they had a childhood illness like meningitis that adversely affects the brain. You guys know I find this kind of stuff fascinating. I don't know me much science, but I like learning about it from people who do. I'm sure as many of you know this as well, serial killers tend to have very specific things in common. And something we see, not all of the time, but man, so much of the time, is a dysfunctional or abusive relationship with the killer's mother. It can also be the father, but it is overwhelmingly an abusive or strained relationship with the mother. Bobby Joe Long's mother and father were not together, and his mother dated a lot, but she never kept a boyfriend for very long. She had a lot of men coming in and out of the house. And well, hey, if you're single, do your thing. But we're finding out that if you have kids and you do that, it can have adverse effects on your children. In fact, Bobby Joe Long insisted on sleeping with his mother, and experts have hypothesized that he felt, obviously, if he was in the bed, she couldn't have a man in there with her. She wouldn't be bringing a man home with her after she finished working her late night shifts. Bobby resented his mother. She was gone all the time, and he resented her multiple short-term boyfriends. But of course, he also loved his mother, maybe a little too much. He slept in bed with her well into his teenage years. His parents got back together for a short time, but then separated again. And his mother got a dog that she apparently doted on. When Bobby was 13, he shot the female dog, and killed it, and told people that he hated the dog because his mother fed it filet mignon while he was fed hamburger. So, like many serial killers we see, he was raised by Mother of the Year here. Around this same time, Bobby met Cynthia Bartlett and they fell in love as teenagers. Only then did Bobby stop sleeping in bed with his mother. He confided in Cynthia that his mother embarrassed him because she wore sexy clothes and has so many boyfriends. I just want to skirt here for a moment. The issue is not the clothing, okay? Let's be very clear about this. The issue is about the way society treats women who dress how they want and maybe show a little more skin than other women. Bobby wouldn't have been embarrassed by the fact that his mother wore more revealing clothing if people didn't make him feel embarrassed about that, okay? So let's just stay on track here in 2022. We don't blame clothing or behavior or going to a party, things like that, for other people's bad behavior, do we? No, we do not. You're getting the mom voice. Bobby and Cynthia seemed to be good for each other. They were protective over each other, and Bobby told Cynthia that his mother was going to get surgery for him to remove the excess breast tissue that he had due to his condition. And he did have that surgery in 1967. That same year, he and Cynthia started sleeping together. And for a while, Bobby seemed to be doing a bit better. But then he was caught stealing a car with a friend when he was 15. When he was 17, he was arrested for stolen property. He dropped out of the 10th grade twice and started working as an electrician's assistant. As Bobby changed and matured, a hatred for his mother began to grow inside of him, and at times he acted out violently towards her. He tried to re-enroll in the 10th grade a couple of times, but each time he was expelled for bad behavior. That's the answer, right? A kid with head trauma, struggling in school, throw him out. No help, no assistance, no social programs. We sure get a lot of things wrong, don't we? When Bobby was 18, a girl accused him of bad things, but the charges were dropped because the police determined the girl was lying. He enlisted in the army to get the army to pay for training on how to become an electrician, and he was stationed in Miami. On his days off, he would party and drink, and he once received 7 motor vehicle tickets in one day. He did finally earn his GED while in the army, and when he was 21, he and Cynthia were married. It really feels like at this point he was kind of teetering on what could possibly be a normal life, but a normal life just wasn't in the cards for Bobby Joe Long. When he was 21 years old, Bobby was riding his motorcycle and he crashed into a moving car. He was very seriously injured. He had injuries to his head, shoulders, and leg, and he spent months in the hospital. At one point, the doctors thought they might actually have to amputate his leg because it was crushed so badly, but they did end up saving it. While in the hospital, Bobby's sex drive got out of control. And this is not uncommon with head injuries. You know, people can have personality changes when they've got a serious head injury, and changes in the sex drive can be part of those changes. The nurses hated tending to Bobby because 5 or 6 times a day, they would walk in on him when other people really don't want to be in the room. And then they also noticed that he was always trying to get Cynthia to have sex with him in the hospital bed. He was discharged from the army due to the injuries in this motorcycle crash, and he had a small pension, so he didn't really have to work full-time in order to support himself. And Cynthia also worked, so that helped. sitting at home with a lot of free time, Bobby Joe Long decided to start placing ads in the classified section of the newspaper to meet women. He couldn't get enough sex from Cynthia. He was really out of control in that manner, and Cynthia was also pregnant at the time. Their son was born in 1974, and that same year, Bobby was first arrested for verbally and physically abusing Cynthia. They had a daughter in 1975 and began moving around because Bobby couldn't find work. They ended up in Hollywood, Florida, and Bobby began working as an electrician. He even got an associate's degree from Broward Community College and worked briefly as an X-ray technician. In 1980, Cynthia had had enough, and she filed for divorce. Bobby was forced into a small apartment, and he was then fired at the hospital. He moved in with a friend of his, a woman named Susan Replogle. I hope I'm saying that right. And a few months after that, Susan accused him of assault. Again, police said there wasn't enough evidence to do anything to Bobby. But I guess Bobby didn't move out. And a short time later, Susan called the police again and said Bobby had pushed her down the stairs. And this time, charges were filed, but it was just for a misdemeanor. Then in 1981, Bobby was arrested and charged with sending obscene material to a 12-year-old girl in Tampa. Police had evidence of phone calls traced to Bobby's house, and he ended up pleading no contest to that. He decided to leave Florida and move back in with his parents, who were back together again and living in Canova, West Virginia. What no one knew is that the things Bobby Joe Long had been arrested for were just the tip of the iceberg. Bobby Joe Long had been assaulting prostitutes in the Miami area for years. He was violent and he had hurt several of them very badly. In 1983, he gets another job as an X-ray technician. And very soon, female patients start making complaints that Bobby is making them completely disrobe for X-rays on things like their arms and their legs. And he is, of course, fired. Why do I say of course? It was the 80s. I'm actually kind of surprised he got fired. He decides to move back to Florida, and again, he gets a job at a hospital. You always want to believe that medical professionals are just that, professional, but that is not always the case, and it's actually kind of terrifying. Bobby meets a woman named Elise at the hospital. They're co-workers, and they started dating. Elise was religious, and she started taking Bobby to church with her. She also insisted that Bobby pay his ex-wife some of the back child support that he owed her, and he did end up sending Cynthia about $4,000, a portion of what he owed. So here again, it sounds like there might be a little hope that he's doing better, right? No. He's found guilty of pushing Susan down the stairs a year and a half earlier, and this sends him kind of over the edge. He begins ranting and raving about the system and how much he hates these lying women and how the deck is stacked against him. Then he returns to court for sending this obscene material to the 12-year-old girl, and they give him 2 days in jail. He starts to realize, hey, nobody cares that I'm abusing women and girls. I'm just getting a slap on the wrist. And this makes him confident. And his behavior quickly begins to escalate. March 6th, 1984. Bobby Joe Long decides it is time to take his desires to the next level. He sees an ad in the Newport Richie, Florida newspaper placed by a woman who is attempting to sell her house. He calls the number listed in the ad and makes an appointment to see the home, knowing the owner will meet him there. While the owner is walking through the house with Bobby, he pulls a gun on her and forces her into the bedroom. He steals her jewelry and assaults her. Later on, interviewers and doctors will make a list of the assaults that Bobby committed and think this woman was probably about number 50. Elise, Bobby's girlfriend, becomes confused when Bobby starts giving her lots of jewelry. She knows what he makes at work and isn't sure where the money is coming from to buy this jewelry. Well, obviously, it's coming from the sex workers that he is hiring and then assaulting and robbing. For the next several weeks, Elise notices a change in Bobby. He has always been arrogant and had kind of a false bravado about him, but it gets worse. He's meaner than usual, and she starts to get concerned. Something is changing in this man, and she doesn't quite know what to do about it. March 27th, 1984. Artis Wick is working the streets of Tampa, Florida. Bobby Jo Long pulls over and picks her up. Their encounter goes badly, and even after Artis is assaulted, Bobby is not satisfied. He is angry at this feeling of not being satisfied. What he's been doing for quite a while now isn't working for him anymore. It's not enough anymore. And he decides he's going to try something new. Bobby puts his hands around Artis Wick's neck and strangles her. Bobby Jo Long has just committed his first murder, and poor Artis will not be found until November of 1984. A month later, Bobby abducts Mary Hicks at gunpoint as she's driving. Bobby somehow gets into Mary's car, it's a little Jaguar sports car, and holds the gun on her as they drive. Well, Mary is not about to let Bobby hurt her, and she guns the engine and drives the car straight into a corner, crashing the car. She runs from the vehicle and gets away and is later able to identify Bobby. So he's done, right? Now he's caught, correct? Hold on to your hats, my friends, because Bobby Jo Long doesn't get a day in jail. All he has to do is pay to repair Mary's car and he gets probation for kidnapping and carjacking at gunpoint. Like, sometimes in these older cases, it's just those details are too much. They're too much, man. Bobby then finds out that his girlfriend Elise was having an affair with another man, and he tells his mother that there are no good women in the world, and he hates them all. He finds another job as an electrician and continues picking up prostitutes and hurting them. In May of 1984, 20-year-old Nguyen Thai Long, who went by Lana Long or Peggy Long, I'm going to call her Lana Long today, was walking home from work. Lana was trying to make some changes in her life. She had recently quit her job as an exotic dancer and had been going on job interviews. Bobby picked her up, telling her he would take her home. And I cannot begin on this platform to tell you what he did to this poor woman. Like, I can't even tiptoe up to what he did. There's nothing I can say. And a really sad detail to this particular murder is that two boys found her while they were flying plastic homemade kites on Mother's Day. What they saw, I mean, I doubt back then they got any counseling, but they would have needed it. About 10 days after Lana's body was found, Bobby is again fired from his job as an electrician because his boss had been receiving complaints from female customers saying that Bobby had been incredibly rude to them and aggressive, cursed at them, and been very unprofessional. And then the boss found out that even his male coworkers were uncomfortable around him and were shocked at the kinds of photos he kept in his wallet and would just openly show people. This guy was a creep. A few days after he is fired, Bobby picks up 22-year-old Michelle Sims as she walked along Kennedy Boulevard in Tampa. He takes her to a secluded area, just like he did with Lana Long, and does very similar things to her. Again, I can't even tiptoe up to talking about what he did. Michelle's clothing is strewn about the scene, and her white pantyhose are hung up on a branch and covered in blood. There is an olive green colored men's t-shirt, size large, laying near her body. Police notice the similarities between these two women. They are both sex workers. They are both about the same age. Some physical similarities were there, and both were driven to similar areas. They were both in the same state of undress. They were both bound in the same manner and left in very similar, very shocking positions. At the site of Michelle Sims' body, police find some human hair. They find a bare footprint and they find some distinctive red fibers, little short, they thought they were carpet at the time. And there's also some tire tracks. They also find semen. At this point, authorities are quite sure they have a serial killer working in the area, but they had no idea just how dangerous he was or how many women he had hurt. June 8, 1984. 22-year-old Elizabeth Ludenbach was walking home in the late afternoon Tampa sun. She wasn't a sex worker, just headed home from a factory job. Bobby Jo Long pulled over and offered her a ride, and she accepted. Bobby drove Elizabeth to a secluded area and pulled out a gun. Elizabeth was assaulted there, and then Bobby drove his victim to an orange grove in Brandon, Florida, where he... I can't tell you. For some reason, after the second assault, he allows Elizabeth to get dressed, and he tells her to get back in the car, but Elizabeth cannot stop crying. Oh, I hate this part. And the poor girl, it just... Bobby gets annoyed with her crying, and so he takes out his rope, which is part of his signature at this point, and makes it so she can't cry anymore. He dumped her body in some bushes, and he took her ATM card. He found where she had written her PIN down, and then spent the afternoon driving from ATM to ATM, emptying her account. Elizabeth was not found for about 3 weeks, and in the Florida heat, there was only about 25 pounds left of the poor thing. No one has any idea how many women were hurt or killed that summer in Florida. There is just no way of knowing. Two of the victims had been dancers here at the Sly Fox Lounge on North Nebraska Avenue in Tampa. Police had begun a daily routine of sending officers into the streets to warn prostitutes that there was a serial killer on the loose. They handed out their business cards and they told the women to contact them if they saw anything suspicious. They strongly advised that the girls stop working and go home, but as we know, that just isn't an option for most of the women in that life. On September 7th, 1984, a man calls the police and tells them that one of his reliable employees, Vicki Elliott, who worked for him at the Ramada Inn coffee shop, hadn't come into work and he was worried. The police go to Vicki's apartment and they find an airline ticket Vicki had purchased to go home and see her parents. And that let them know that Vicki didn't just walk off. She had this ticket that she was planning on using in a couple of days. And after she doesn't turn up, they realize something bad has happened to her. While they're looking for Vicki, Bobby is fired again from the hospital he's been working at part-time because his female coworkers cannot stand him. And some of them actually say they're going to quit if he isn't fired. He meets a woman named Ruth Allende and they go on a few dates, but Bobby also continues his other activities. On the night of September 30th, 18-year-old Chanel Devon Williams was walking home late at night after working the streets that evening. Bobby picked her up and beat her mercilessly. He assaulted her and then he beat her some more. She was then shot and shoved from the moving car and was found a week later. Of course, I am skipping over a lot of details here, but this is the nature of this platform and it's only getting worse. I can't say things here that you can see on the noon news, so I'm sorry that I can't share scientific details with you. I don't even like to get explicit or say super graphic things, but I feel like words with actual meanings are kind of important. And I feel like telling a victim's story is also important. And I'm hoping at some point we can get back to some form of balance here. On the same day Devon's body is discovered, Bobby kills 22-year-old Kimberly Hopps, who was known as Sugar on the streets. Her body was not discovered for weeks. Karen Beth Dinn's friend is killed on October 13th, 1984, and she is found on the next day. Then on Halloween, the mummified body of Kimberly Hopps was found. November 3rd, a 17-year-old girl is riding her bike home from her job at Krispy Kreme at 2:30 in the morning. The 80s, man, if kids today, like people in their 20s, knew what the 80s were like back then, people just did not watch their kids. That wasn't my personal experience because I lived in a really small, really strict town, but my experience was not the usual experience. Bobby Jo Long sees this girl, her name is Lisa McVeigh, and he literally snatches her off her bike by her hair. He assaults her in the car, but then his behavior changes very drastically. He takes Lisa home to his house. And he tells her that she is beautiful. He attempted an act that hurt Lisa, and so he stopped. He actually took all of the bullets out of his gun, so if he suddenly felt compelled to shoot, he wouldn't be able to. He was being nice to Lisa. I mean, not really, but you know what I mean. He forced Lisa to shower with him, and then he blow-dried her hair for her. He made her a sandwich and told her that he wished they had met under different circumstances.
Ugh, yeah. Like this young girl would want anything to do with your dusty, crusty, nasty old ass. Ugh, I get so disgusted with some of these guys.
For some reason, Bobby decides he's going to let Lisa live. He blindfolded her and he gave her instructions. He told her to tell the police that her abductor was a black man because of course he did. Of course, he's also a racist on top of everything else. And he told her to say that this black man had long, greasy hair and a pot-marked face. Bobby put Lisa in his car and started to drive. On the way back to Lisa's house, Bobby stopped at a bank, and he stepped out of the vehicle for just a moment. Lisa was smart, and she takes that opportunity to kind of peek out from under the corner of her blindfold. Lisa is able to see that the color of the car is maroon. She recognizes the bank that they are at and recognizes the Howard Johnson's Hotel across the street. And then she sees the most important clue, the clue that ends up cracking this case, the word Magnum on the dashboard in front of her. The car she is in is a Dodge Magnum, and she knows it's maroon. Bobby drives Lisa to a parking lot and gives her a kiss goodbye and says, "Take care." That makes my skin crawl. It's 4:30 in the morning at this point. Lisa runs home and wakes her father, and they go directly to the police. The police begin an investigation, pulling records for all owners of maroon Dodge Magnums. And they also start pulling bank records. But in the meantime, Bobby kills 18-year-old Virginia Johnson and 21-year-old Kimberly Swan. Bobby Joe Long is terrorizing this area of Florida, and law enforcement cannot do anything to stop him, but 17-year-old Lisa McVeigh can. November 15th, 1984. Bobby Joe Long is pulled over by a police officer because he is driving a vehicle similar to the one described by Lisa McVeigh. Bobby later said that he felt he had been caught and a wave of relief washed over him, but he was surprised when all the police did was take his photo and let him go. Bobby Joe Long wasn't actually free of the police. They had started to watch him. They had information about his continuous firings and complaints, as well as his criminal record, and they decided to keep an eye on this kind of strange man. Just a day after he is stopped in his car, tests come back on the red fibers found at the Michelle Sims crime scene, and they match the carpet fibers that come standard in every 1978 maroon Dodge Magnum. Police show photos to Lisa McVeigh, and she immediately picks out Bobby Joe Long as her attacker. The cops rush to get an arrest warrant, and because they have been keeping an eye on Bobby, they know right where he's at. He is sitting in a movie theater, and although he doesn't know it, there are two undercover cops sitting right behind him. They follow Bobby from the theater into the parking lot, and on November 16, 1984, Bobby Joe Long is arrested outside that movie theater in Tampa Bay. As he is taken into custody, an officer asks him about the series of murders that have been uncovered, and Bobby replies, "I'd rather not answer that." They take Bobby into an interrogation room and begin laying out photos of the victims. At one point, Bobby said, "I think I might need an attorney." Now, for reasons that vary, depending on who you ask, no attorney was ever called, and this would have some consequences down the road. The interrogation continued, and when it was over, Bobby Joe Long had confessed to all known 8 murders committed and discovered in Hillsborough and Pasco counties. He also confessed to a 9th murder, that of Vicki Elliott, a waitress that he had abducted. One of the interrogating officers asked him, "Why did you do this?" And Bobby replied, "That's my secret, and I'm going to take it to my grave." Investigators went to Bobby Joe Long's home. There they found a photo album full of pictures of women who had reported being assaulted. They found jewelry belonging to the murder victims that Bobby had kept as trophies and also given to his girlfriends. At that point, they realized that Bobby Joe Long, their serial killer, was also the perpetrator the media had dubbed the classified ad artist. I can't even say the title that they gave him here. But that's when they started connecting Bobby to not only the murders of the many, many women they had found, but to all of these R's. They had caught not only a serial killer, but the classified ads assaulter. Bobby Joe Long went to trial and his confession was thrown out, mainly due to the fact that there were claims made that an attorney was not provided when Bobby asked for one. But even without the confessions, Bobby knew he was done. He was then tied to additional victims, including Artis Wick, thought to be his first victim. His attorneys reached a plea deal and the trial went right to the penalty phase. Bobby was convicted of 8 murders and the abduction and assault of Lisa McVeigh, and he was sentenced to death.
A lot of lives just gone right down the tubes because of me. You know, in one way or another. And it's not a good feeling. It's not a pleasant feeling. I'm not proud of anything I've done. And the worst thing is, I don't understand why.
To show you how sick and evil Bobby Joe Long is, that clip there where he's speaking so plainly as if he's sorry, it's all an act. The cops know him and they say he was the most arrogant, sick, cocky little POS you ever met. He never shed a tear. He never said he was sorry. And then, of course, he starts crying to the court that he's the victim of brain trauma. He can't be executed because he has seizures. It's cruel and unusual. Like, bro, we don't give a shit about your seizures. Like, give me a break. I'm not... Anyway, Chanel Devon Williams' uncle actually said to the press, he didn't give my niece any mercy or thought. Why should we give any to him? On April 23, 2019, Governor DeSantis signed Bobby Joe Long's death warrant. A month later, he was taken to the death watch cell, given his last meal, which I'm going to show you on an upcoming episode of Dining with the Damned, and was then strapped to the gurney and given the lethal injection. He was pronounced dead on May 23, 2019 at 7 p.m. My heart goes out to all of the victims and their families. We will never know how many people this monster hurt or how many he killed. I feel for these families because they'll just never have answers, and there are so many more that don't even know what happened to their loved ones. But I hope everyone is doing their best to navigate the wake left by this sorry excuse for a man, Bobby Joe Long. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, True Crime Tuesday. Hit the like button if you liked the video and subscribe to my channel if you want to support me. It does help. You can also support me by joining my Patreon. Stay safe, my friends, and be kind to each other. And I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object. Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.